You're listening to the Eyes on Conservation podcast, episode 132. Welcome to the Eyes on Conservation podcast, where we bring you engaging conversations about wildlife and conservation from all across the globe. I'm your host, Matt Podolsky. Okay, so I'm guessing that folks have started to notice that we've been lagging behind on our typical weekly release schedule with the show. We are going through a bit of a transition period with the show and also with Wildlands as a whole. In fact, one facet of this transition will be discussed in detail on today's discussion. But regarding the podcast, I just wanted to assure you that we aren't going anywhere. We are planning lots of exciting interviews for the coming months, and we will be back to our weekly schedule very soon. Now, we had to make the vaquita the focus of this episode because I am about to embark upon what could be the most dramatic shoot of my career. In less than 2 weeks, the vaquita capture effort will begin, and our Wildlands crew will be there to capture whatever happens. Now, as if the capture effort itself wasn't exciting enough, we also have an exciting update to share about our film project. This will be discussed in detail later on in the show, but just to give you a teaser, we have partnered with several other large production companies to produce the feature-length version of our film. We're super excited about this collaboration and everything that it means for both vaquita awareness generally and for Wildlands. Let's see what Sean Bogle thinks.
I guess our listeners, there's been a great deal of silence on our end. A lot of it has been, I think where we ended up last was communicating, trying to inform people about the last shoot we did, which was in the spring earlier this year in March. And of course, that's the time period that the illegal fishing of the Twaba is at its climax. And so, you and I both went up there and to kind of follow through with that since we've been doing that for consecutive years. And one of the things that we noticed then in previous years was that we saw a lot of military attention in the area in order to provide enforcement to prevent the illegal fishing of the Twaba. So, there was an astronomical amount of Navy and Army, and I have to say that it was probably the most extreme conservation effort that I've ever seen or even heard of, being that it turned the area into like a militarized zone with additional checkpoints and just a lot of soldiers and whatnot. And then now, thinking that like, okay, that was going to be the standard, like obviously you need to have this type of enforcement to prevent these illegal actions. But what did we learn during that time? Despite all the attendance of that enforcement, it didn't do anything. There still was dead vaquita found and tons of illegal fishing happening. I would have thought that would have just been standard. Like they would just keep putting that amount of troops during that time period. So, I would say it's about a 3 month period that those guys were there with helicopters flying over doing aerial surveys around the Gulf night and day. And well, that's not what we witnessed. It was nothing. There were no soldiers there. I mean, there was just your basic, the Navy facility that's there, but they did not send reinforcements from Ensenada or Mexico City. And, of course, if you don't do that, I mean, if illegal fishing was happening while they were there, and then, of course, now they're not there, it's obvious what the outcome was. And so it was even worse in the previous year as far as the illegal fishing activity. And there were more dead vaquita discovered. I think it was a recorded total, official recorded total of 4. But of course, you and I know that there were more. We were able to see evidence of that. But of course, that's off the books.
I think it's important to note here as well that, I still see this in a lot of the reporting that comes out about the vaquita, which is that people are still using the population estimate from last year, right? So they're saying that, there's about 30 individuals or there's less than 30 individuals. And that it's important to note that that population estimate was valid as of December of 2016. And at the point when we, Sean, when you and I were down there in April of 2017, we were going through that time period. Like it's pretty safe to say that the vast majority, if not all, of those mortalities that are occurring, they're happening within this pretty small window of time, March and April, which, as you said, is the peak of the illegal fishing season for Tituaba. And so, if you know that the vast majority of those mortalities in any given year are happening within this small 2-month window, and we know that at least last year, like the rate of mortality for the vaquita population from going from 2015 to 2016 was 50%. We lost 50% of the population over the course of that year. And if we assume that is still close to the rate of decline, and we also assume that most of those mortalities happen within this short window of time, within March and April, then we can, I think it's pretty safe to assume that, we've already lost that 50%, even though 2017 is not yet over, most likely we're looking at a vaquita population currently that's 15 individuals or less.
Yeah. And that's pretty harsh news. But I think that's, people are responding, as you say, to this number, 30, and the situation is much more dire, which of course, desperate times call for desperate measures. And that's why, they feel like the last ditch effort here is to capture the remaining vaquita, because they just can't seem to get a control of this issue, meaning that they are not able to enforce or stop the illegal fishing. And, vaquita are just, they're bystanders in a war that they have no control over. And unfortunately, it's taken them out so quickly that, no one else knows what else to do. They've done everything they possibly can in trying to negotiate with the Mexican government and implementing certain measures in order to protect the vaquita, but they've all failed.
Yeah. And I think at this point in the conversation, I think it might be worth bringing in just a little bit of this conversation that I had and recorded with Lorenzo Rojas Bracho, who is one of the main characters in our documentary. So we've been sort of following his efforts to help save the vaquita for the past 2 years or more. I was able to just jump on a quick call with him. He's, Lorenzo is the one who is sort of leading this capture effort and sort of leading the vaquita conservation effort generally on the Mexico side. And, as you might imagine, it's a very sort of stressful and hectic time for him. He's dealing with a lot of sort of feedback, like both positive and negative, on this effort to capture vaquita. And I think you'll be able to sort of tell by listening to this conversation that I had with him that, this is a really sort of deep-seated internal struggle that he's been going through, right? Because it's this moment where, if there is no effort made to go out and capture vaquita, the species will almost certainly be extinct within a year. But going out and capturing vaquitas is extremely risky, and there is absolutely no guarantee that this will be successful. And this capture effort could lead to this extinction, the extinction of vaquita happening sooner. That's entirely possible that this thing could just totally fail, and they could accidentally kill a vaquita through the process of trying to capture them. This could get ugly, and it's a huge risk, and a lot of conservation groups are very adamantly opposed to it. So Lorenzo's been getting a lot of criticism, I think we should just listen into that conversation just for a bit, just to hear Lorenzo's perspective on the capture effort.
Oh no, it's a hard moment at the same time. It's not where we want it as people. This is where we are. There's nothing we can do to change that, I guess.
Yeah. You know, yeah, obviously nobody wants to be in that situation where this obviously is a last-ditch effort, but it's better than nothing, right? I mean, and it's you know, sort of a monumental effort to, you know, create sort of not only like all the logistics that need to happen in order for this to occur, but like the political will for this to, you know, even be considered and for this amount of money to be spent on this effort.
No, I mean, we always think that we're going to be successful, but deep inside, you know, there's a chance of failure. So, yeah, it's kind of mixed feelings, or that you're getting into something that nobody has done before, and that might sound exciting, but there are chances of failure, probably just like any other project we've done so far. But this is the riskiest and most complicated project we ever done before. I mean, amount of people there and many of the things they are not even in the Mexican legislation to do. I mean, there are no permits for the type of things we want to do, for example. And so it's interesting in how complicated it's getting to do these things.
Right. I mean, from a political perspective, I mean, it seems like there's a lot of support, like within the Mexican government to make this happen, right? I mean, despite all the complexities that are surrounding this.
Well, there is support from certain side. There is attacks from others.
Right.
And it's these kind of things, you never have everybody on your side. I guess that's the way it is, and we just have to learn to live with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a strange feeling. I don't know. It's hard to describe how we feel, what we're doing, what our expectations were a year ago and where we are now.
Spending, you know, such a significant part of your career just working with this one species, and now like being at this moment where it's, you know, I mean, this, I mean, let me ask you this. I mean, does the survival of the species really hinge on this effort? I mean, if this fails, is have we lost all hope for the vaquita?
I think so, yeah, because vaquita will not stand another 12 season like the ones it has. I mean, that would be, I mean, for sure that's the end. I don't think anybody from us has been doing this for a long time thinks there's another chance for the vaquita. This is it. If this doesn't work, then I think we can all go home and do something else.
Yeah, it's difficult to sort of like put that into words. It's sort of like what that feels like, right? Because obviously it's like there's a certain amount of excitement of like doing something that is new and that nobody's ever tried before, right? But it's an enormous question mark, right? As far as, you know, what the chances of success are, and it's difficult to think about what, you know, what that will feel like if it's not successful.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know. We don't even have the way, or at least I don't have the way to say our chances of success are 60% or 80%. I mean, we don't even have the data to estimate our chances of success. I mean, you can do modelings and try to do it, but really, we have no idea.
Right.
I mean, honestly, it's as unexplored territories, and it's the largest at this scale. I mean, yesterday we were counting, there are about 100 people involved one way or the other in this, and about 50 will be on the field at different times. So it's, and I'm just met with NGOs in the UK, and it got the whole Tuava black market, it's greater or larger than Vaquita, and corruption, and it's so far, there are so many things that are so outside our hands that it's desperating.
Yeah. How has your role sort of shifted, you know, because I know that there have been a lot of changes on your end as far as like the actual role you're playing in just general like the Vaquita conservation effort, and now this specific attempt to live capture Vaquita. What role are you playing at this point, like right now, and how has that changed over the last, you know, year or 6 months?
Well, it has changed that anything we do is only Vaquita. Like my wife says, I'm eating and I'm thinking of Vaquita. I go to sleep and I'm thinking of Vaquita. Or Vaquita CPR in this case. So it's a big change. I mean, interviews, hundreds of interviews, which gladly they have stopped by now, but it was just interviews, attacks on the media, colleagues from different universities attacking us. And, I mean, it was scary at some point how things were, but you know, it was. And then, I mean, I always tried to be, don't mention this, but I have always tried to be kind of not too close to ministers or anything like that. But this time I'm very close to the minister, not that we're friends, but I'm the guy he calls the most for advice and what to do, what not to do. So, I mean, usually I talk to the minister twice or three times during the presidential period, at most two times every year. But with this minister, it has been pretty intense, which is good because that means how interested he is in Vaquita. If he was not interested, he wouldn't be doing it, of course.
Yeah, I mean, that's good to hear, right? That you guys have this open line of communication. The attacks that you mentioned, right? I mean, coming from folks who maybe disagree with this capture attempt, I mean, that's got to be particularly difficult to deal with because, I mean, you know, I mean, as you said, it's like, it seems pretty clear that if there is no capture attempt or if this capture attempt fails, then we're looking at the extinction of the Vaquita. And I just imagine, you know, in your particular situation specifically, it's got to be difficult to hear people attacking this effort.
Yeah, when some that are close people, or it hurts more than if it's someone I don't know, but other people making stories up about this, what we're doing, pretending they have the science and they don't have it, and putting on the media. And so those things are kind of uncomfortable. I try to not to pay attention, but although most of the time I'm successful, there are a few times that I'm not, and it just bothers and hurts. But a good friend who's been involved in Vaquita told me that I was putting the last nails to the Vaquita coffin by trying to capture them. And that was it was pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough, right? Because it's like, well, I'm doing the same thing if I actually do put forth this effort, right? I mean, like, with certainty, like, you're putting the last nails in the coffin if you just do nothing, right?
Yeah, that's how we see it. But it's interesting how people have their own views. Mm-hmm. And like, people saying, oh, let them die with dignity. And I say, well, that's bullshit. I mean, you die with dignity if you have cancer, and you choose to say, I'm not going to get treatment and I'm going to accept my faith or my fate. But saying things like, let them go away with dignity, I mean, that sounds pretty weird to me.
It is, you know, and I mean, I'm reminded of this constantly because, you know, that is the exact same language that people used back in the 1980s in reference to the California condor. When there were only 22 California condors, there was this massive campaign, you know, launched by the Sierra Club, and they advocated to let the species go extinct. Death with dignity was like the catchphrase that they used. And it worked, right? And I mean, like, those people feel like idiots now because they did launch this captive breeding effort for California condors, and it was successful. And, you know, the condor is still endangered, but, you know, now there's like 450 of them instead of 22. So, I mean, yeah, it's, you never know, right? I mean, it's always a risk, but it certainly seems like a risk worth taking to me.
Well, that's how we feel, that it's worth taking a risk. I mean, it would be, I would feel like shit if we were just sitting down waiting to see Vaquita go extinct. I remember when we finished the survey in 2015, and we didn't finish analyzing the data, but the minister called me to go to Mexico City and meet with him and just give him a briefing of how the survey had gone, what, where we were doing, or how we were doing with the data, etc. And he asked me, so how many vaquitas would you think the estimate would be? And I told him, well, I don't know, but probably 50, 40, or, I mean, less than 100 for sure, but I said, I don't know, 50, 60, or pick your number. And he said, Lorenzo, are we going to just sit here and watch vaquita go extinct? And I said, no, you have to stop all the illegal fishing or the government. And then also, well, do we have a B plan? And I said, well, we can try to capture vaquitas. And he got all excited about it. And I was not happy that he was getting excited. But I knew that at least if he was excited, it meant that we had a B plan, which we didn't have really. That's something I regret through my life, that
right.
We always thought we were going to stop gill netting and fishing. And I mean, of course, we didn't know that the mafias and the Chinese and drug cartels were going to get involved in all this. But we should have had a B plan at some point, and we didn't. So the B plan came a bit late.
Right.
Well, we have a C plan. If we capture vaquitas, we will have tissue cultures and gamete rescue and genetics, and we might clone vaquitas in the future. But
yeah, let's hope we do not have to resort to the C plan. Let's hope the B plan works. But
yeah, no, I hope we have less vaquitas than 30, of course. Capturing less than 30, it's going to be a challenge. I mean, finding them, probably not, but trying to capture them and hoping they behave as we would like them to behave. They're easy to handle and they don't get stressed. Anyway, it's a interesting process. I don't know how to describe it. It's just kind of these mixed feelings and budget and waking up and importing equipment or going for visas, and then we're all in this madness process, and then suddenly you have an earthquake and everything closes, and then you feel like shit because you're thinking in Vaquita when there are hundreds of people that got killed and disappeared and lost their houses. So it's like you feel like so stupid thinking of Vaquita when there's a tragedy like that one.
Yeah, that certainly adds a whole other layer of difficulty to this, right? I mean, especially since I'm sure you're relying on a lot of folks that are based in Mexico City to do a lot of this work and to manage a lot of the logistics of this effort. Well, I don't want to take up, you know, too much more of your time, Lorenzo. I really appreciate you.
No, that's okay. Are there any kind of pragmatic or practical issues we need to talk about, or everything is okay and we can talk later? Or
all right, that was our brief update from Lorenzo Rojas Baracho, the biologist who is leading the vaquita capture effort. You are listening to this less than 2 weeks before that capture effort begins, which will be on October 12th of 2017. Sean?
So obviously he has Lorenzo, there's a couple facets to this. So yes, the issue for vaquita captures is extremely controversial, and we've seen a variety of responses. You know, there's a lot of people that are pro capture, but there's equally the same amount of people that are against. And that's the same thing with giving praise. You know, we've got people that are praising the Mexican government for this effort that they're doing right now, but then there's some that's saying, well, you could have done this 30 years ago. And so when you talk about Lorenzo and how long and how much time he's invested in the conservation and survival of vaquita, you know, we're talking, you know, 20 plus years of his life, he's just lived, breathed vaquita. And his role as a scientist for most of this time period has put him in a position to where that he would just try to understand and then collaborate with other researchers on how to correct the issue, and then acting as essentially the voice for the vaquita and explaining to the Mexican government, which he's done repeatedly over the years during his career and involvement with the vaquita. But I think part of this internal struggle that he's having is not just the concept of just the capturers themselves, as well as you know, the fact that why are we in this position? Like this could have been completely prevented. I wouldn't even be in this position, but it's how close he is even to the Mexican government, because he's not just a representative of a scientific institution anymore, a university. He's now essentially, he's the go-to for the Mexican government to learn about what the process is, which is funny because it's not exactly like he's saying anything different than he did before, which is what he had distance between the government and him and himself. And now he's like, you know, working for the government, in order to stop this from, you know, stop this from happening and then protecting the vaquita. So I think when you're so, not only does he have all this weight from previous years and frustration of having the Mexican government listen to him, it's only now that he's got their attention and he's working for them. But under those circumstances, having to deal with the fact that he actually has to pull the vaquita out of their natural habitat, and, you know, or at least, you know, even though they're going to be put in sea pens, you understand what I'm saying?
No, I do. It's a situation
he's spread so thin right now. I can't imagine. And I feel like all the other people, like Barbara Taylor, and the rest of the server crew, completely empathize with Lorenzo, but they know that like Lorenzo is bearing much of this weight because he has this pressure from, you know, the Mexican government, assuming like, listen, you know, we're listening to what you're doing. We can confide in what you're saying. And so if this fails, you know, and I'm sure Lorenzo is thinking this, if this capture effort fails, you know, one, he's not happy that it's even happened to begin with, despite whether the vaquita pull out of this some way or other, who knows. But if it fails, what is that going to do to him personally? I mean, of course, humanity is going to be deeply impacted by this atrocity of losing another species after the red flag had gone up, and Lorenzo being one of the main people to raise that red flag.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, despite all his efforts, still failed. Like, I can't even imagine what that does to a person. And not to mention, I don't, how's that going to affect his livelihood later on? Like, what will his role be beyond that?
Yeah, it's, you know, and I mean, honestly, you know, that's why he's one of the main characters in our film, right? Because I mean, he's going through this struggle and it's difficult and emotional, and fascinating. But yeah, it's also a good story, right? And regardless of the outcome, there will be lessons for everybody to learn, anybody who's involved in conservation, even folks who aren't, you know, moving forward. So, you know, that is, you know, sort of at the heart of it, like why we have chosen to follow Lorenzo and why he's one of the main characters in the film. And I think, you know, at this point, maybe we should transition into talking just a little bit about our project, the film project itself.
Sure.
Because, you know, you talked a little bit about the previous shoot, our previous trip to Mexico, which, you know, was in part to gather more footage, and to gather more footage that's connected to the illegal Tatuaba fishing season that was occurring at that time. But we also had a secondary goal on that particular trip, which was to host a series of screenings of the half-hour version of Souls of the Vermilion Sea, which we did, and they were hugely successful. And, you know, we talked a lot about that on previous episodes of the podcast and on some blog articles, et cetera. But, you know, I really felt like we reached a critical mass, at least of students in San Felipe, which I think is a really important audience to be reaching with this message about, you know, what's really going on at the heart of this conservation issue. And that really was sort of the primary reason why we put together that half hour version of the film, even though we knew that we weren't done shooting and we still wanted to tell this story in a longer format. We felt like it was necessary to put together that half hour cut, you know, just to get the word out and to share this information with people while there was still a chance to have an impact, right? Because we're still right now in a situation where, you know, we're not sure if the vaquita will be extinct or not by the time we're complete, by the time we're done with the feature length version of the film. So, I mean, that was the primary goal, but there was a secondary goal. And the secondary goal that we had with the half hour cut of the film was to use it to raise the money that we needed to finish this film and to produce a feature length version of this documentary about the Vaquita. And also to secure distribution for that final feature length version of the film. Those were sort of our two secondary goals, because, you know, it costs money to make a feature length documentary. And, you know, what happened, and, you know, we're sort of not quite at liberty to discuss all of the details of this arrangement. But we did make contact with some funders. And what has happened is that this film project has become a lot bigger than just us, than just Wildlands. So this is now a collaboration between four different production companies at this point, and Wildlands being one of those four production companies. And Wildlands was sort of brought on board because we have this extensive knowledge of the situation down in Mexico. We've already spent 2 years shooting. We already have quite a bit of footage that can be used in the final film. But obviously there is still quite a bit of footage to collect in order to produce a feature length doc. So that's kind of where we're at this point. You know, it's pretty exciting. We actually have the money that we need to do this the way we want. But I think even more important than the money is that, you know, we have, this is a collaborative effort now. This is not just about us. This is four production companies coming together to tell the best story possible, to have the greatest possible impact. And, you know, I think the resulting film that comes out of this collaboration will be exponentially better than anything we could have done by ourselves, and anything that any of these production companies could have done, you know, independently by themselves. And that's why, you know, when you see these big feature length documentaries that get a lot of attention, I mean, it's, you know, they're almost always a collaboration between a number of production companies.
So obviously that's how Wildlands operates, right? The collaboration thing. It's an essential component of who we are as an organization, and as individuals. And, you know, but one of the benefits of collaborating with an organization like this, or with several of these production companies like this, but collectively as a whole, is the reach that we're going to get. Not, so this isn't just about documenting the Vaquita story, which of course is, you know, I've said this many times, is essentially a historical marker of an event that maybe we can learn from in the future. But the potential as far as this film reaching people in other countries that may be experiencing either those people that are completely oblivious to a situation like this, because of course, you know, despite the internet, there's a lot of information that is lost and people are unaware of. But this story can resonate with other individuals, as well as just the general education about, you know, what happened and what was done about it, and where are we now? What does this all mean? So there's a lot of benefit to a collaboration like this, and I will, you know, admit that we were very fortunate to have this happen, because you and I both know that we tried really hard to initially, before we started the project, to, you know, get people on board, and for whatever reason, people just didn't see the vision, and nobody was documenting the story. And then, of course, now here we are in one of the most exciting points, you know, Vaquita captures and using Navy dolphins, and I mean, it's an event that has never happened before, which has a complete unknown outcome. But of course, that is very exciting to media and filmmakers and people in general now. So now Vaquita has a lot more attention than it did, which is absolutely fabulous, don't get me wrong. But the fact that people didn't have the vision the way that we did and didn't get on board early, you know, that's because it would have sped up the process for us.
I mean, it's worked to our benefit, right? I mean, it means that, you know, early on when we first started shooting, there was nobody else that was interested in covering this story, at least in the way that, that we were trying to. And now there are a whole bunch of filmmakers, documentary filmmakers that are interested in, you know, telling the type of story that we wanted to tell, you know, when we first started talking about this, you know, more than 2 years ago. And, you know, luckily for us, you know, one of the biggest players in this space, as far as filmmakers out there and production companies out there that became interested in this story, they saw what we were doing and they didn't want to start from scratch. They wanted to team up with us. They wanted to collaborate with us because they were able to see what we had done so far and they were able to recognize the value that that had. So, I mean, the situation sort of worked out to our benefit. Of course, I mean, I think it's important to note that, like, you know, we didn't jump into this collaborative arrangement, you know, without like quite a bit of sort of deep thought and like soul searching. Right. Because I mean, you know, yeah, overall, like this is definitely a positive thing. It's good for the Vaquita. It's good for Wildlands. You know, we are giving up, a certain amount of, the creative control that we had over this thing. It's no longer just us. Now there's four production companies involved and everybody has a say, in the creative process. So, I mean, that was a decision that you know, it was not made lightly, right?
Well, I mean, and of course there's, you know, and it wasn't just the creative control thing. I mean, the whole point of our project and why we were releasing these short, as you mentioned earlier, was to raise awareness before the Vaquita went extinct or potential extinction. And, you know, that's why, you know, we were running around doing these screenings and why we released it free online. We didn't see any reason to, you know, have any monetary gain over this, because that defeats the purpose of reaching more people if it meant that it was going to be dictated by a price tag. And, you know, a lot of these collaborations, in fact, of sharing our content, you know, these NGOs, conferences, film festivals, you know, it's still out there on the circuit right now. And this is the 30-minute cut that I'm referring to of Souls of the Vermilion Sea. But one of the, you know, one of the things that was really difficult in going into this collaboration, because of course, you know, when you're doing this sort of thing, they're going to essentially absorb your project, including all your footage, is that you have to remove that content from a public space. That means the internet, which is, you know, if anybody's noticed, the 13-minute film, Searching for the Vaquita, and the 30-minute version have both been removed from the internet. However, part of the agreement was to still be able to, you know, use the films for advocacy, but they have to be in a private setting. So these are private screenings. So yes, film festivals are still fine. But also, you know, if there's a request for an institution like a university or, a convention, much like what's coming up in the end of October, the Society for Marine Mammalogy Conference, which is the largest marine mammal conference in the world. You know, they're going to be screening the film. And of course, you know, that'll be for a bunch of scientists, but, you know, our film has been screened for, you know, universities, you know, not to mention just what we've done, even in Mexico, but, you know, and because it would defeat the purpose if we can't raise awareness while this is happening.
Absolutely.
So definitely something.
Yeah.
We emphasize, like, listen, like, it's fine. We don't mind pulling from the internet. I mean, it was a little hard to do that because I didn't want to feel like we were stopping that portion of it, because it's one thing to tell a story, but it's another thing to actually have a story that can impact an issue like while it's happening, as opposed to like after the fact. So that's, you know, that's kind of where we are now.
Yeah. And that's a really good point. Right. And I actually feel like, you know, that is a role that we will continue to play. Right. So, I mean, you know, of these four production companies that have come together to collaborate on producing this feature length doc about the Vaquita, you know, our organization, is, you know, Wild Lens is the organization that has the most significant social media following. And so, I mean, I think that is one of the roles that we will sort of fall into, as this project continues to move forward, is that, you know, we will continue to be, you know, sharing information and updates about what's going on as this progresses and like during the capture effort. I mean, absolutely, right? I mean, we are going to be on the front lines. We are going to have much, you know, that's another one of the benefits that comes along with this collaborative arrangement is, you know, because some of these other production companies have some serious clout, we will have exclusive access to this capture effort. We will have much better access than any of the other production companies that will be down there. And there's going to be quite a few that are going to be, you know, trying to get access to the capture effort. And we'll be out there every single day. Whereas all these other production companies are going to have to sort of take turns and just, you know, hope that they get lucky and they're out there at the right time. We'll be out there every single day. And so we will absolutely be sharing updates on how this progresses, and, you know, both via this podcast series, but also via, you know, blog updates and on our website and on our social media channels. So, I mean, that is not going to change, you know, that role that we feel like we've been playing, right? Because, I mean, we have thought of this project right from the beginning as more than just a documentary, but, you know, a media outreach campaign. I think that, you know, the way this collaborative arrangement is working out, you know, I think that, you know, WildLens will sort of fall into this role as being the organization that follows through on that original goal.
First and foremost, obviously raising awareness for Vaquita. I mean, this is that I'm still having a hard time grasping what that's going to look like because of the scale and the amount of funding that is going to be going into this project now. And it's also nice to know that, you know, even though if you have to give up a little bit of this creative control, you know, the recognition that WildLens will get on the screen, and then of course in conversation, but also just not even have to worry about the funding portion. Like if you want to do something, you just do it, as opposed to like start, stop, and raise a little bit of money here, do a little bit of this. And I know that, you know, films in general, like do a lot of that back and forth. Sometimes you get a lot of money up front and you don't have to worry about that sort of thing. And, you know, obviously that's not how things played out for us. We, you know, were able to start this project and then kind of like scrap through. And of course, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears on not just on your part or mine, you know, and, you know, all the amount of volunteer hours, but must heavily credit all the volunteers that have helped out on the project as well. Because there's definitely been a great deal of people, that have reached out during this project. And it's really interesting that when you're doing a project like this, even though you're putting all your time in, and this is, again, it's not about, you know, money on any level. And of course, money makes the world go round. So it's nice to get some funding, but the types of people that appear or come out of the woodwork when they learn about a project like this and wanting to help, and they also are not thinking about getting something out of it more than just being a part of the project. And just the resources and the quality that comes out of, you know, or that type of assistance is just, it's quite amazing, to be honest, to know that there's people out there that, you know, want to work together for this cause, and they realize that this is much bigger than themselves. So it's rewarding, especially in this climate that we're living in right now, and I mean environmental and political. So it's refreshing to know that there's people out there that can see the benefit of something like this. And, you know, that's the hope part, right? That's the part where you're like, okay, so, you know, things aren't so bad. And it's nice to know that we can all kind of come together to work on something as important as this together. And that's, you know, that's us being the voice for wildlife. There's, you know, we all know that wildlife can't speak for itself. So it's those types of connections and collaborations that unify us. And it can be scary, but it's also very rewarding, and it feels good.
Yeah. And, you know, I think you mentioned earlier on, Sean, about, you know, sort of this original goal that we had and putting together the feature length version of this documentary about the Vaquita, which, you know, was to have this film sort of be like a mile marker in history. And to sort of be this sort of turning point you know, within this much larger issue that we're trying to address here. Because yeah, the film is about the vaquita, but the much larger issue we're trying to address here is, you know, the extinction crisis that we are now in. And as you said, I mean, the vaquita will not be the last species to go extinct. It will not be the last marine mammal species to go extinct. And so we, you know, that original goal really was to, like, you know, take this issue and tell a story that would elevate this issue into a, sort of the larger general human consciousness, right? So that it really did become sort of like a critical turning point in the future of efforts to protect endangered species and prevent extinctions. And, you know, that felt like a really, really lofty goal, you know, when we first started talking about that. But, you know, and it still feels like a very lofty goal, right? I mean, but it now feels within reach, that goal. And that's pretty cool. You know, the fact that it really does feel like at this point that this effort that we're now engaged in, this collaboration, you know, really does feel like there's a strong chance that the resulting film that will come out of this will be something that that reaches, you know, that has an impact on the overall sort of consciousness that people on this planet have of the extinction crisis.
I completely 100% agree. And, you know, it's always about the bigger picture, right? That's where it always comes down to, is like every decision that we make in the foreground is going to send ripples beyond that. And we want those ripples to extend themselves deep into the future, much like any conservation film or conservation effort. You know, even if it's not captured on film, that's always going to be that goal. You know, can we be several steps ahead to prevent this from reoccurring? But I do want to mention, and I don't want to like create a somber moment, but I want to emphasize how not only controversial, but I don't want people just to, or their feeling or their thought process to fall to the wayside now, just because the vaquita, this effort, this last ditch effort, which of course is, you know, people, it wasn't an easy decision for people to make. And you can tell that by some of the, you know, the backlash that you're hearing now. I mean, hence Lorenzo's current situation. You know, but Lorenzo's one of several people that are experiencing that. It's that, like, one, we have no idea if the vaquita are going to be captured in this whole thing. That's one of the biggest unknowns. So, you know, we'll obviously do a follow-up after all this kind of reassessing, okay, what happened in October during this capture period. But going beyond that, vaquita or no vaquita, these communities that still live there are still completely unstable because they can't fish. So this is that idea where this is beyond vaquita, because it's, you know, these nets and whatnot are eradicating all the marine species in there, and there needs to be a better system in place for these you know, these communities to be able to generate an income and you know, have sustainability as far as, like, if, you know, where are they going to get their food from? And it's, and I don't just mean having money to purchase food, but being able to, like, they've been catching their own food forever. And all of a sudden they don't get any money, and all of a sudden, or, you know, what money that does come in, it's hit and miss. So it's very frustrating. And then, you know, these are people that have been eating the seafood out of that sea, and now they have to order seafood from another area because you can't fish. So beyond vaquita, these communities still are going to need lots of attention. And then also the ecosystem as well. So this is that bigger picture. And I just don't want people to become complacent because they go, oh, we tried, you know, just because it's safe, the vaquita fail, doesn't mean you just stop taking care of those communities. Or if you save the vaquita, doesn't mean you stop taking care of those communities, because, you know, this is that cycle that ends up happening. And this is where a lot of people, they get left. And it can't happen, because we're going to be right back in the same situation. We have to fix this problem, and this problem needs to be fixed, you know, essentially all over the world. So I you know, again, I'm not trying to be so.
Well, there's a causal relationship there too, that is important to address, right? Like, the vaquita is important, the human communities are important, but they're influencing each other, right? And I mean, you know, the reason the vaquita has gone through this precipitous decline is because there was this failure, this outright and just utter failure to address the problems being faced by this human community. If the problems faced by the human community were actually addressed in a thoughtful and comprehensive way by the Mexican government or some other entity, right? Like, then we would not be in this situation. The vaquita would not be in the situation that it is in today. And so I think it's important to like feel compassion for the people that are in this situation that, you know, feel like they don't have a choice, even if they are playing a role in the decline of the vaquita, and to recognize that, you know, there are these connections that go back and forth, and you know, these two issues are not, they're not operating independently of one another. They are influencing one another. And if you want to save the vaquita, you have to save the community, all the communities of the Upper Gulf. You know, you have to find a solution to that. And that's still the case. You know, even if this capture effort is successful, they're not going to be able to release any vaquita back out into the wild until all the gillnets are gone. And all the gillnets are not going to be gone until you solve the crisis going on within these communities and you find a way for these people to earn a livelihood.
We know firsthand, and of course, it's going to be really interesting to see these communities during this very sensitive time, you know, because you know, a lot of what's happening and what's already happened recently is, you know, addressing these communities and realizing that it's not all about the vaquita. The mentality is going to be that if you save the vaquita, then okay, we're going to be able to go fish the way that we normally did. And I mean, that's not going to happen. But what that's going to do is, if you're not going to take care of these communities, and if they can't go fish, although people are assuming that right now, hence that, you know, violent breakout in El Golfo de Santa Clara just this past week, where a fisherman asked one of the government officials in El Golfo de Santa Clara that, you know, are we going to be able to fish again beyond the vaquita captures? And, you know, he was told no. And, well, the response is that government vehicle that the official was riding in was burned in protest. And that is going to be the consensus of all the fishermen that have, not just the ones that have not been paid out of the compensation program, but just the whole idea that they can no longer fish and they're just scraping by. I mean, just. So it's, the system is extremely broken and has been broken for a very long time, and nothing is going to change unless these voices are heard, and that the government, of course, is the only entity that's going to be able to solve this issue. But they need to take care of their people. It's important to do that, because it's, you live in a country that completely ignores you, you know, and I know there's a lot of countries like that, including the U.S., but it's important to know that this is it's far from over.
This issue is far from over. You know, we are at this point where we, you know, it feels like we're about to reach this sort of like pinnacle of the issue, which is this effort to go out and capture vaquita. But I mean, the overall, the story itself is far from over. And, you know, we'll be working on this project for at least another year through to the completion of this feature length documentary. And we will be continuing to update all of you fine people who are listening to us talk right now as we go through that process, right? I mean, both sort of sharing information about the film project itself and how it's developing, but also, you know, most importantly, sharing updates on the issue itself and how it plays out, how the captures play out, and whatever happens, you know, what results from that moving forward.
In closing, I would like to add, for those of you listening, although the films that we have been removed from the internet, we will respond to requests if you're interested in holding closed screenings, schools, or, you know, conventions or something like that. So definitely reach out to us and, you know, submit your request, and then we can kind of go from there as far as making that happen, because just because it's not on the internet, we are still very adamant about sharing this story so that people can become aware now rather than later.
Yeah, that's a great point, Sean, and good to remind people of that, you know, this half hour cut of the film that we put together, it's still designed to be used as an outreach and educational tool. So yeah, if anybody is interested in hosting any kind of educational screening, definitely give us a shout. All right, that wraps up today's episode of the show. Be sure to check out the show notes for this episode, where you'll find information on how to set up an educational screening of Souls of the Vermilion Sea, as well as other fun information about the Vaquita and our mission to tell its story. Those show notes can be found at wildlensinc.org/EOC132. The Eyes on Conservation podcast is a production of Wild Lens. Today's episode was produced by myself, your host, Matt Podolsky. Our theme music is by The Humidors.